Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Connor Sports. Connor Sports is a world leader in sports services, the official floor of the Final Four and the Olympics. They do everything from NBA floors all the way to your high school rec center gym. ConnorSports.com, visit them today to learn more and get yourself a new floor. Also, if you're not already a member of the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit RisingCoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit RisingCoaches.com. All right, today we have a special guest, good friend of mine, Coach Matt Hamilton from Hampton University, all the way in Virginia. How you doing today, sir?
Doing good. How's everything out your way?
Yeah, everything is good. I got a new scenery, new backdrop. I got myself a new job. So I'm the head coach now at Ellsworth Community College, wearing purple for the first time. I brought Jordan with me. He's still in the background of our podcast, but, you know, excited to be at a new place, but excited to get you on, man. Hear your story and learn a little bit more about you and your life and your basketball journey. So start us off first, man. Give us your background and how you got to where you are now.
Well, like I said, I appreciate you having me on. You know, I'm excited to do this. You know, Rising Coaches has been a big part since I've been a manager. So I'm an even transition to assistant now. But I started as a manager at Appalachian State. I was there for 3 years, you know, helping out with the staff there, doing everything. It was me and one other guy, Adam Muse, and we were allowed to do everything there, which, you know, was super beneficial to us. You know, helping with scouting reports, recruiting, player development, laundry, all that stuff. And then that's when, you know, I met you my senior year. Then you and the new staff was coming in. I think I had a semester left of school. So it was either stay on as a manager or I had an opportunity to go be a volunteer D2 assistant about 20 minutes up the road at Lees McRae College. And You were one of the ones that encouraged me. Like I said, you had an opportunity to go coach, and that's what we love to do. So I went and took that opportunity, and we won the most games in school history, won 15 games. So it was a lot of fun. I was 21 years old coaching guys that were older than me. So, but no, I loved every bit of it. And then had the opportunity to come here to Hampton as a graduate assistant. So came up here for a year, and Coach Joyner allowed me to be part of his staff. And then we had some staff changes that next year, and he felt like I did a good enough job to get bumped up to an assistant after that first year. And so I just finished year 6 as an assistant up here at Hampton.
Yeah, quite the journey. So talk a little bit about your experiences. You know, you mentioned like a conversation we had, and I actually remember it vividly of you sitting in my little cube office. It was like a little closet.
Yeah.
Come a long way since then. We each got whiteboards in our office now, so that's
awesome. Yes.
But no, we had that conversation, and I always tell guys, hey, if you want to coach, you got to go coach. And, you know, tell us a little bit about that journey of, you know, transitioning from a manager to a coach and what you kind of went through and why that was beneficial for you.
Yeah, and I think that has really stuck with me, and something I definitely tell people whoever asks my advice is, you know, if you want to do this, you got to make sacrifices sometimes. And, you know, if you love it, you know, like I say, you can coach anywhere. You know, it's basketball. It really doesn't matter, you know, what level, as long as you do what you love. And like I said, I think, you know, it's also about the kids at the end of the day, so helping out the kids. But now, like I said, I went to Lees McRae, and you know, the biggest thing was just the on court, the interacting with the guys, trying to build those relationships to, you know, obviously help them on the court, but off the court. You know, it was good for me because I was young. You know, I was, you know, just finishing up college. You know, so I could relate to the guys a little bit more. But it was an experience that, you know, not only the coach allowed me to do anything, but the guys kind of took me in, which, you know, is always hard as a younger coach. Sometimes you don't feel like, you know, you're trying to do too much. But if you build, it's the saying, you know, if you they don't know how much you know until you show them how much you care. So, and that's kind of the track I took, is show them how much, you know, I care about their success on and off the court. And then, like I said, just getting to recruit which is obviously always a big part. And, you know, that's kind of the thing you told me about is go coach and be able to go somewhere you can recruit, because that obviously helps the resume. So it was definitely a decision that was, you know, amazing. I still look back at it to this day. You know, used to drive the buses down the mountains and up the mountains to games. And, you know, I got to be the head JV coach, so running my own practice and everything. So it was awesome. It was an awesome experience.
Yeah, anytime you can get reps, coaching is important. Anytime you can get reps, especially the lower level you go, it's the more turnover you get as well with players. So, like, you know, JUCO level, you're signing, you know, 10 to 12. D2, you're signing 8 to 10. D1, you might be signing 5 or 6 a year. It's like you're almost doubling your amount of kids that are coming in and out of your program. And, you know, at those littler levels, like, sometimes it's harder to get kids. So you have to recruit more. And so you're looking at 60 kids at a time instead of 25.
Yeah. And, you know, we really got a chance to – it was me and Daniel Wong, who's at Catawba. Yeah. And we got to experience everything, you know, from budget-wise, because you only have – it's like a salary cap sometimes at D2 where you've got to only recruit certain kids. But then also we kind of took the social media and ran with it and kind of got Lees McRae a lot of pub during that time. So, like I said, just being able to wear every single hat, you know, match strength and conditioning, you know, recruiting, compliance, all that stuff. It's definitely an experience that, you know, people have opportunities that lower level, quote unquote, definitely builds you more and makes you a more well-rounded coach.
Yeah, definitely. Dunk Mountain, you built your own brand.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right. So tell me a little bit about, so your jump, you went from, you know, like a student coach / you know, assistant to a GA at Division I. How did that opportunity come about? Because there's a lot of guys that were managers or, you know, different guys that have dabbled in coaching at young ages. So getting a GA job, talk about how you came about that and kind of what you did specifically as a GA.
Yeah, so it was actually, I was volunteering at Lees McRae at the time. So I was thinking, you know, if I'm going to volunteer here, you know, why don't I try to go D1 and, you know, even volunteer or whatnot. So I literally emailed or reached out to every school that didn't have, you know, ops, GA, whatever the case may be. It was just like, hey, I'm willing to volunteer my time, try to get into that, you know, space. And one of my coaches knew one of the coaches at Hampton, who they were actually looking for a GA at the time. So I ended up meeting with Coach Joyner in Charlotte, and he was just like, yeah, come on, like, if you want something you want to do, you can come on and help us out. You know, he was like, you can pick whatever title you want. You know, so obviously I picked, you know, Director Ops. And I was really going up there with nothing, thinking I wasn't getting anything. He was able to look out for me with the GA position and, you know, a little bit stipend, but I was actually working third shift at Harris Teeter from about 10 p.m. to 3, 4 a.m. stocking shelves to try to make ends meet. And then I would go home, maybe sleep for an hour, and we have practice at 6 a.m. in the fall. So I'm there, you know, as a manager, I'm there an hour early setting everything up. So it was a humbling experience, but, you know, Coach allowed me, like I said, being more involved, you know, more involved with game planning, with scouting, on-court work and recruiting and budgeting. So all that stuff. So it was difficult, but like I said, if you want to make that sacrifice, you know, you kind of do whatever you can to make ends meet to follow your dream and follow your passion.
Yeah, I think, you know, the sacrifices we make in this business, I say it a lot, you know, the business is not always great, but the profession is great. And sometimes you have to sacrifice, and it, you know, it comes out ahead for you, you know, when you put in the time and you put in the work. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that it doesn't happen for either, and they eventually end up getting out of coaching or, you know, going into something that they necessarily didn't have that 100% drive for. But, you know, you've been very fortunate.
Now, yeah, and real quick, and just because I saw this on Instagram this morning, someone put, like, a job is how you make money, a career is how you make a living, but a passion is how you make a difference. Yeah. And like I said, that's I think, you know, you, me, a lot of these people, you know, that passion you have, you know, really, really drives you to make a difference in, you know, people's lives. And like I said, that's what fuels us. So,
yeah, the passion part, that's one of my core values in my program. And I just believe in that wholeheartedly, because if you know it, because if things are hard and you don't love it, it's not going to work. But if you love something enough, you don't care how hard it is, and you're able to overcome more adversity and many other things. So you've been at these places, and even though you've only been at three schools, you've kind of transitioned titles, and you've had multiple moves within the organization of levels of conferences. So you were at App, and they went from the SoCon to Sunbelt towards the end of your time. Then you were at Lees McRae Division II, which is a different level. And then you go, were they in the MEAC? And then they went to Big South?
Yeah, my first 2 years, we were to MEAC. And then we went to Big South for 4 years. And
now you're going where?
To the CAA. So,
okay. So now you're
up in the world.
You know, become a low major to like a low major plus to like a mid major now. How has that transition changed your perspective of levels, coaching, recruiting, or is it not really that much different and people just, it's a different title, a different league. So besides scouting, like tell me a little bit about how you've adjusted in that, because that's kind of unique.
Yeah, I think it changes a lot. Like I said, even going from the MEAC to the Big South, a lot of people look down on the MEAC, but it was, we had a lot of really talented teams, talented coaches, players. I just was never, you know, getting that exposure. Then transitioned to the Big South, where we basically had to learn everything new. And, you know, when you're in the league for so long, you know what every coach, you know, is going to do. So scouting is easy. So, I mean, that first year we had to learn tendencies, all that stuff, and recruiting picked up a little bit. But we kind of competed against the same schools. But now moving to the CAA, I guess that's the biggest difference is recruiting. We can recruit against, you know, anybody. Obviously with the times and HBCUs being popular, you know, now having that CAA where we're in a legit mid-major conference, you know, people can get the best of both worlds of being an HBCU and CAA. But I guess it's just the recruiting battles, the, you know, having to do everything you can to recruit against other teams. And like I said, one thing we do, we're not going to ever, you know, down talk anybody. You know, we're going to tell you the good and the bad, you know, and just be ourselves. And a lot of people like it, and it's worked for us because we've been pretty successful with that. So
definitely. So what's it like? So there's like different levels of, obviously HBCU is kind of like, you know, oh, that's like the lowest major or whatnot. And there's been a little bit of shift in that. But you guys being in a mid-major conference, but yet still HBCU, you got you, Tennessee State. I'm not sure if I'm missing other ones, but like,
what's A&T. It like being,
North Carolina A&T. What's it like being, hey, one of the three highest levels of an HBCU?
It's good. Like, I was actually talking to a kid the other day about it. Like I said, you get the best of both worlds. You know, HBCU, since I've been up here, is the biggest takeaway I've taken is it's a real family, you know, within, you know, not only Hampton, but just HBCUs in general. So, like I said, you get the best of both worlds of playing in a mid-major conference and, you know, being an HBCU. And it's been good. I know a lot of people have, you know, gained interest. I mean, we just got a pretty big commitment today, so it was exciting to see how, you know, now it's starting to change a little bit, and people are looking at HBCUs, not just because it's, you know, a lower conference or they put the HBCUs in their own category, but now we're a mid-major conference opponent, just happened to be a HBCU.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. So, you know, You're a white guy at HBCU. We can just come out and say it. Very, very unique. You know, a historically black college or university. And, you know, what has that experience been like for you? Like, I've only traveled because I've been at a little bit higher levels, played one road game and we actually played at Hampton when we were at AF. And the one thing I remember is our guys were like, "Coach, there's like 50 dancers in the behind the basket. Like, what's going on?" They were so distracting when we were shooting free throws. But tell us a little bit about the experience, you know, not only culturally, but like, hey, what's that like for you on the daily?
It's been amazing. Like I said, I grew up in Charlotte, South Charlotte. So, you know, my parents did pretty well. And going to App, you know, it's kind of in its own little secluded space up on the mountain. So, like, going to Hampton has been, you know, changing, but in a good way. I knew nothing about HBCUs or Hampton. I got up here and I was like, wow, this actually, the only stuff I knew was, you know, Michael Vick and Allen Iverson were from this area. Then I got up here and, you know, it's right on the beach. You know, it's a beautiful area. But then just, like I said, just the family atmosphere. And just the, like I said, we talk about games, like you were talking about, the crowd, everybody comes out. Like I said, with the dancers, with the band is big with HBCU. So it's always a lot of fun environment, and just, it's been good for me, obviously, because, you know, you see a different side, but being able to, you know, develop more as a person or as a leader, for myself, just seeing a different school and how traditions and everything, work. It was, and I'm trying to do the same for our guys. Like, it was funny. This was a couple years ago. We were on a 5-game losing streak, and I was in the gym. And we had like a week off, so we had 5 days for our first game, our next game. And so I got the aux cord and I started playing country music. And I'm blaring country music, and the guys are coming in. They're like, "Man, what are we doing here?" And I told the one dude in the gym, I said, "I guarantee everybody that walks in this gym smiles." And I promise you not, every single guy that walked in that gym smiled or laughed that country music was playing. And we went on a 5-game winning streak and made it to the won the regular season, made it to the conference championship game. So it was something that we all always look back on and joke about. But it's like being a part of HBCU has been, you know, definitely life changing in a good way.
Yeah, you're an App State alum, just like the two big name country singers, Eric Church and Luke Combs is the other one, right?
Yeah, yep. We were bumping that thing that week in practice.
That's awesome. Up the mountain, down the mountain, wherever. Yeah. Well, that's a cool story. Like, it's just a unique experience. Like, obviously in basketball, it's, you see a lot of things and you are able to bring people from many diverse backgrounds and, you know, play for one another and having each other's backs. It doesn't really matter. And culturally, like, that's just an experience of your family. Like you said, your family, and you're bringing guys together with, you know, unique backgrounds, but you can get them to just have each other's back. And that doesn't happen in all aspects of life, especially in today's society and different things. So I'm sure there's a lot of things that you experience and that are different. And also, like you said, life-changing, making you more diverse as a person, making you be able to be more relatable in many aspects.
Yeah. That's why I think I tell people always, experience HBC, whether it's homecoming. I tell recruits that all the time, and, you know, even friends and family that come. I mean, it's just, It's an awesome experience. I'm glad it's finally getting, you know, some traction. But like I said, it's a spot that, you know, it's no different from, you know, another spot. And like I said, it's just a big family, and it's awesome to be a part of. So,
yeah. So going on your 6th, 7th year of coaching, what has kind of taken you the longest time to learn as a coach, as a younger assistant coach at the Division I level and even Division II level? Like, what things did you think you knew and you kind of learned either the hard way or kind of really evolved? Talk us through one of those experiences.
I think the biggest thing I would think about is just my emotions, I guess. So I'm a competitor. I'm young like these guys. And we sit there all the time telling them to control their emotions, like focus on the next play. That's one thing that I've had to, you know, work on and be good. Cause like I said, if I'm emotional, you know, and one of our players is emotional, then we're not getting anything done, you know, in practice or, in game. So I guess just controlling emotions as a young coach, being that, you know, fly on the wall, like, and just listening to guys. You know, I don't have all the answers. They don't have all the answers, but we're all working towards a common goal. So he said, as a young coach, you might come in thinking, you know, you got to prove yourself, you know, saying this, that, whatever. But it's really, you know, if I could go back, I might listen even more. Because, you know, the guys or other coaches, they'll tell you, you know, what you need to know versus trying to, you know, make someone uncomfortable or do things the wrong way, I guess. So I think listening and then just emotions was one thing. And then, you know, just basketball wise, I guess just recruiting, continuously recruiting. Like I said, I know you know this, it's nonstop. And like I said, I live about 3 minutes from the campus, so I'm the first one they call every time anything's going on. So I guess just like I said, we're here for these guys, like raising these guys. It's our responsibility. So, you know, we're here for them. So I guess those are some of the big things that I've taken.
Yeah. And so much of that you talk about, you know, that's like your growth as a coach, but it's also your growth as a leader, because I feel like, you know, emotional intelligence is something that's become more prevalent in basketball and in leadership and in our society, of understanding how to read other people's emotions and keeping them in check. But it's hard if you're not modeling the way yourself. And we go crazy at referees, and we go crazy at, you know, a guy for messing up, and we're, you know, mad, angry at them. And well, how do you think they're going to act? You know, it's the same thing reciprocated, is you want to model the way of controlling what you can control. And we talk a lot about in our program is, hey, what happens next can't be based on how you feel. Like, what's the next best action? How can we move forward? And like you were saying, it's like, it's not that you're right and I'm wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong. It's, hey, being on the same page to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. And that stuff takes time. It takes growth. It takes experience. And that's something that you're learning. And, you know, a lot of guys that hang out in those ops roles, GA, ops roles, video coordinators, and all of a sudden they're 30 and they're learning those things. Hey, you've already learned them with 8 years of experience. So like, that's something that, you know, is going to help you tremendously long-term as you get it. And, you know, you talked about the JV aspect of being a head coach. So talk a little bit about that, being a head coach, you know, not discrediting JV in any way, shape or form, but you were able to stand up, call timeouts, make play calls, make decisions. Talk a little bit about your experience as a head coach at that level, or, you know, just being a head coach in general has helped you become a better assistant.
Oh yeah, it helps tremendously. I remember one of the first days. Like I said, this is me being young. So, and I think I ran them dudes into the ground with with sprints or whatnot. And one of the guys tweeted later that they showed me. It was like, man, coach tried to kill us today in practice. So I was like, oh, maybe I've arrived. but no, just being able to, like I said, handle situations, you know, in games, because everything moves so quick. As you know, like, you got to be precise on when to call timeouts, who to make subs, like how to talk, like I said, talk to different people. Everybody learns or, you know, deals with things different. You might be able to yell at one guy, but, you know, you got to talk to another dude differently. So I guess just working and learning that stuff, you know, practice planning, you know, actually sitting down and being the one that, you know, they listen to, you know, having that command of everything. And that actually, you know, helped me out a lot, because Coach Joyner allows me to do a lot here with, you know, kind of controlling, you know, timeouts and drawing up plays and all that stuff. So, you know, I was able to learn that year. And again, the best part, you know, obviously you want to win every game, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, life or death. So, you know, I might draw up a wrong play or do something different, but like I said, it's all a learning experience. And I think it all goes back to what you said and we touched on, is having that experience going out and coaching. Because like you said, the only way to actually learn that stuff is to do it. So it was something I'll always look back. And I mean, what they said, Hubert Davis was a JV coach at UNC, if I'm not mistaken. So like I said, and I'm sure he used that experience to help him this year. So it was definitely invaluable.
Yeah, that head coaching experience, you can't trade it for the world. Your background as a manager, you know, I was a manager, you were a manager, then, you know, GA, assistant coaches, part-time volunteer, kind of done a lot of very similar things. There's a lot of younger guys in Rising Coaches. So talk a little bit about, I know you went to a clinic, I know you're a member, you know, loyal member of Rising Coaches, but talk a little bit about, like, hey, these manager, how does a manager be the best manager? How does a GA be the best GA? How did your foundation of those things help you become a better coach and help learn the intricacies of how college basketball really works?
I think a couple things. I think one of the biggest things is just being humble in your role. I mean, even now as a, you know, assistant, we don't have managers here, unfortunately. I do the laundry. You know, our head coach does the laundry. So just being humble in doing your job, because every job matters. You know, I've said it before, I think managers is one of the most important things to a program.
Right.
Because they can do the little, like I said, if you don't have the laundry, you know, you're in trouble for practice or the game. So just something small as that. So just being humble and working and being able to, as a manager, you serve others. That's the biggest thing. So that was awesome for me to, you know, be that servant leader. And as I go along, I want to be a servant leader for, you know, anybody you come across. And as a manager, you get that experience, you know, tenfold, as long as you look at it that way, you know, versus, you know, being down or not wanting to do something, or, you know, maybe being talked to some type of way. But at the end of the day, you're serving for a greater good, which, you know, has helped me tremendously. And then I think just being able to do the little things, you know, listening and take everything. I think I tell people all the time, I told our GA, anytime you walk in the office or leave the office, you know, I used to go by every coach and be like, hey, I'm here. If you need me, if you need anything, let me know. Or as I was leaving, hey, I'm going to class. Do you need anything? Or, hey, I'm going home for a day. Do you need anything? You know, 9 times out of 10, they won't need something, but they see, you know, your willingness to help out. And then as you get more involved, you know, hey, do you need anything? Hey, yeah, will you watch this film? Will you, you know, help this scouting report? We have this recruit coming along. So I guess just being available and making yourself known that, you know, you might not need something. But eventually, you know, if you show your loyalty and your willingness to learn, I think most coaches are, you know, more adapt to allow, you know, managers to do a little bit more, which I was grateful Coach Capel and, you know, his whole staff allowed me to do a lot.
Yeah, I think that's so important. But like you said, like, you did well on those tasks. So even when you're a manager and you want to, I want to start coaching, oh, I think I can deliver. You think one thing, but it's, hey, just master what you're doing or asked to do, and then keep asking for more. If you do a good job, you're obviously going to be trusted more. You're going to prove value. You're going to prove that you, you know, do have some competencies in things that may provide value to the program. And that's what you have to do. Sometimes it is as simple as just doing the laundry, you know, because, you know, there'll be days, you know, one time a month in my last JUCO, you'd walk into the locker room, the guy's like, well, our stuff isn't dry. And it like completely dampers your whole, like, guys aren't changed before practice and you're stuck in a time frame. And like little things like that, like, are huge things. And, you know, taking pride in all those stuff is
yeah. Yeah, and then I said, not getting ahead of yourself. Like, I had a certain role at, you know, Adam Muse, he was big with the film. So he would do a lot of the film work. And, you know, there's times I'd be like, you know, I would like to do some and, you know, learn. And, you know, they were good about it, but that was Muse's, you know, role. Mine was, you know, more on the court and player development or whatever. So I said, not to get down just because someone else is doing something else, but, you know, just being available. And like you said, just starring, everybody said, star in your role.
Yep, exactly. So as we kind of wrap up here, Is there anything, any questions I should ask you that I haven't, or anything that you want to talk about, you know, just for the Rising Coaches members, or just in general, get it, you know, talk about it.
That's a good question. I think a Rising Coaches helped me a lot, obviously. I don't think I took as big of advantage as I should have, or even do now. Like I said, I went to, it'd be 2012, 2013. I think it was 20 years old, went out to Vegas, met Matt Daniels. I think we met at a camp. He's at North Alabama. I think running like the FCA program down there. And so we ended up rooming together. And I remember going, it was in Vegas. I remember going and we went out to get like some food. I think Adam was there, Andy, Matt, and someone else. And, you know, they're all getting food and drinks. And, you know, lady comes over. He's like, I was like, can I just get a water? And she's like, I see your ID. I'm just getting a water. Yeah, I guess in Vegas, you need to be 21 to be anywhere. So they made me leave the bar or whatever. but I was like, dang, like I had this opportunity to be, you know, with Adam and Andy and stuff, you know, kind of in a more intimate setting. But like I said, I think it's helped me, you know, make a lot of connections. But, you know, I wish and I need to do more of this platform, you know, listening to other people. Because I was at the Jay Billis, you know, coaches leadership program this summer. And actually it was Coach Kern from App who, you know, was talking about, You hear you pretty much, and you can tell me what your thoughts are. You hear the same things over and over and over and over, and how to do things or whatnot. And his example was, because you're a father, his example was like, before you become a father, you'll hear, you know, time flies. Time goes by so fast with them. But until you're in that setting, you don't realize that. So it's the same thing, you know. Yeah, you might hear the same redundant thing over and over, but just, I guess, really grasping, you know, what everybody's telling you and then taking advantage. Like I said, everybody tells you need to network and build genuine relationships. You know, it's hard, I will say, in my opinion, because, you know, you're so focused on, you know, your season and stuff. But that's one thing I wish I would have, you know, done better at is just, you know, really listening to, you know, the people that are giving you advice, even though it's the same thing you'll hear from, I'll hear it from you, I'll hear it from Coach Kearns, Coach K, you know, everybody's got the same thing, and just really applying that. So I thought his little, you know, analogy was interesting. And like I said, you can tell me what your thoughts, because you are a father.
Yeah, I mean, it does fly. It goes really fast. The fact that she's almost 2 years old already is mind boggling to me and my wife and how fast she grows. Cause you see things every single day. And it's like, you encourage your kids to talk. And then, you know, they get to an age and you're like, stop. No. It's unique to hear about growth and hearing your story and reflecting on your growth as a leader. And you talk about listening and you talk about how fast things go. And just trying to just be more present as human beings, I think, is something that we get caught up in this rat race of, hey, who's getting this job? How can we get on with them? How can we, instead of just doing a really good job where you are, 2 feet in, never make yourself number two. Like, you still got to take care of yourself and your growth and your health and your all these things. And Rising Coaches is pride of that platform with, you know, the healthy coach motto, the mentorship program. Don't being afraid to asking for help, trying to utilize your time in the best way possible, because, you know, games aren't necessarily won or lost in the office, but it's how you spend time. And if you can be efficient in some things and eliminate things in your life that distract you, then you could do more with what does matter and why we're doing what we do. And that's to be with people. Like you said, genuine relationships. Well, that's in our little, you know, one paragraph. You know, one of our core values is building relationships and community. Like, that's what this organization is about. That's what it provides for people. And it's, you know, in essence, harmless with that, because it is, you know, we're all on the same team. And you talk about Adam and Andy and, you know, different guys. And like, Andy and I, you'll laugh. The first thing I got when I got here on my desk when I got it was a note from Andy Farrell. And like, it's family. It's awesome. You know, like what was in the package, I'm not going to talk about, but no, he sent me a really nice note, and it's just like, you know, it's things like that, that people have your back, that people love you. And it's hard in this profession because we all want to climb. And then we look at other things that are going on in our game and in our society. And it's just hard to, you know, keep everything in perspective. And I think that people like yourself that do those things, it's going to pay off for you long term because you've done things the right way. You've invested in yourself and you're going to continue to do so.
Yeah. I think going back to being a manager, everybody wants to know, you know, the best, you know, the highest coach or be relationship with him. But I think my best friends in the industry come from working camp. Like we like working, I think Clemson camp was always a big one. You know, I know, you know, all the guys are from there, but you know, Nick LeGroon or Austin Klontz or, you know, Muse, Hunter Henderson is at Wilmington. Like all these dudes, you know, even though they might not be high major and can do stuff, but the not burning bridges and just, like you said, building genuine relationships. You know, some of them are, you know, some of my best friends just from working camp, not, you know, going out and, you know, trying to persuade a, you know, high major assistant or whatever. Like they just come from, you know, just hanging out and being genuine. And, you know, them guys will always be there. And they say, cause this business can get crazy at times. So just staying loyal and everything will, like you said, work out how it should be. And even me and you, I mean, like I said, I was meeting you going back in the day at App, I had no idea who you were and, you know, what you could do for me, but you helped me more than you could probably even imagine just from giving me that little advice of, you know, going to coach and staying in touch over the years, even though we might not, you know, talk every week, every month, like you can always pick up the phone and, you know, be there for each other. So.
Yep. And that's what the profession needs. And that's what, you know, you've done. And like you said, like I try and do that and be a resource for everybody and utilize the platform to teach and learn to make us better instead of, you know, tearing each other down, trying to build each other up. And at the end of the day, like it's silly, man. I got this job and I had like 1200 text messages. Like, what are we doing? We coach basketball. Like, I get it. Like, you know, about 1,000 of them were like, hey, really happy for you, excited for you to get closer to home, blah, blah, blah. About 100, what's happening with your job there? Is Coach Corey going to get the job? Or, you know, who's going to get it? Can you help me get it? Like, and then the other 100, like, can I work for you? You know, what are you doing with your assistants there? What, like, it's crazy. It's crazy, you know, what that's like. And it's overwhelming at times. But at the same time, like, keep it in. You know, keep it real with guys. And I think over time, those genuine relationships, just keep helping people, keep serving others, and you're going to end up, you know, getting out of it what you want. So, you know, is there anything else you want to talk about on our way out? Or what's the best thing that can happen in your life right now, Coach Matt Hamilton? Matty Ice, they call you. What's the best thing that can happen in your life right now?
The best thing? Yep. Well, my brother gets married in a couple weeks. So that's exciting. One of my little brothers, I guess we're playing Bethpage Black, which is like from the U.S. Open course.
There you go.
So I guess not lose that many golf balls when I play out there. But no, I think for real right now, it's just, like I said, I've been through this and through the ups and downs and learning experience. It really is, you know, serving others. You know, I get more joy out of, you know, helping our guys do something and then me sometimes. It's like you touched on, it might not be the best thing all the time, but it's something that, you know, we're in this business for to help each other. So I guess just seeing someone else succeed and, you know, obviously if they succeed, then hopefully that will help me succeed.
100%, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, sharing your story, and keep working hard, keep doing things the right way. And, you know, I would say your behaviors come before your success. So just keep grinding away at it. Keep treating people the right way. Keep serving others. Keep developing as a leader. And you got to keep doing more clinics with Rising Coaches. We got to expand your library and your network and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we got to. And I appreciate you having me. This is an awesome experience. And, like I said, Rising Coaches is doing a lot for a lot of people. You know, like I said, you just got to take advantage of it and make yourself uncomfortable. Put yourself out there to help yourself grow. So
there you go. All good things. Matt Hamilton, Hampton University. Thanks for your time.